the kitchen of intrigue, Kurt Jackson and Chris Kellel are cooking up a batch of mystery soup.
Each episode serves a new blend of tips, tactics, trends, and tales from the business and design sides of the escape room world.
So grab your spoon, because this episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Mystery Soup.
Welcome back to Mystery Soup. I am one of your hosts, Chris. And joining with me today is our other amazing host, Kurt.
Oh, amazing. You had amazing.
I got amazing last time.
So, that's right. Yeah,
I can't always be amazing. I got to sometimes turn it over.
Fair enough.
We have another great episode for y'all. We have Scott and Kalia from Immersive Machine on this week talking about escape rooms. Who does it matter what else? We're talking about escape rooms. That's the coolest thing ever. Like, we could just talk about this all day. So I think we have about a 4 or 5 hour episode for y'all today, and should be good. But
I'm ready. No. Let's dive in.
I am so excited. Chris unfortunately hasn't had the pleasure of playing your room, but Tina and I loved it, and Kay, you were there to run us through the game, and it was so good, so much fun. So thank you for that.
I was informed that you were the individual that left the tiny little duck in our bathroom.
That is correct. We're the duck people.
I was racking my brain trying to figure out where that thing came from.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Awesome. Usually if we go and we do multiple rooms at a place, then it takes a couple of rooms for people to go, wait a minute, did you do this? Is this where this came from? And we'll leave them in each room. And then if not, at the end, we're like, did you find anything during your resets or in the restroom? But yeah, just a fun little thing that we like to do. I'm glad you found it. So can we get each of you to do a short intro of who you are?
I'm happy to hop in. So yeah, my name is Scott Levy, and I am one of the two owners of the Immersive Machine. My main responsibility for the Immersive Machine is handling all the tech stuff and helping bring things to life and helping with the game design. I think we split the game design equally. My background before opening an escape room, I was working with video game companies in California doing live events. Mainly, I would work with Blizzard, the game company that does like World of Warcraft. And I worked mainly with the game Hearthstone, and I did events for Comic-Con and PAX. And they were interactive attractions, so they would get like a parchment quest log and they'd have to run around and accomplish a bunch of tasks. And then there was always an element that was like an interactive hub where people would press buttons. So it was very similar to escape rooms. And that's how I learned about escape rooms, is because people kept coming up to me and saying, hey, this is like an escape room. And I was like, what's an escape room? And that led me to playing my first escape rooms and realizing that, oh, I actually, over the last few years, I've developed a skill set to actually be able to build one of these maybe. And yeah, that was my introduction to escape rooms. And it wasn't at all possible until my paths crossed with Kalia years later. And I'll let Kay introduce herself.
Yeah. So my name is Kalia Ring. And so I basically have been a part of the DIY home haunt industry for most of my life. It wasn't until probably about 10 years ago that I started doing these like massive sets in my home, where I would start basically transforming my house in like June into these massive Halloween sets with hidden passageways and fake walls. And there'd be like party games, and all the food would be themed, and the drinks would be like, it would be these full like immersive parties. And my daughter's birthday is in October, so we would always do like her birthday at the beginning of the month, and then obviously Halloween. So all this work for 2 nights.
Right.
It was great. But yeah, so my role in the Immersive Machine is prop making, set design. And like Scott said, we split the game design down the middle. I guess most of the time I also wear the bookkeeping hard hat. I think that's the hardest job. I don't know. The game design is the fun part.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when we met, it was hilarious because a friend of ours was trying to set us up on a date. And little did they know that we were going to hit it off creatively versus romantically. And South Cybernetics was kind of, can we do this without killing each other?
Oh, wow. Oh, thank your friend, though, because if not for him, we wouldn't have this amazing game. So this is the first or only escape room game that either of you have done, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I've done a couple of events that were like escape room themed events, but they were just pop-ups. They were just like one night or two nights. So nothing that was official. What's amazing about finally working together on a permanent game is it gives us the ability to iterate and to make changes and to make things sturdy. And it's been a lot of fun to not have something that we just tear down after one night of use, that we can actually tweak those fun knobs until we have something that we're really proud of.
So were there any like escape rooms or immersive events that really were a inspiration? Did you do immersive events before this?
Yeah, I've played a bunch of escape rooms leading up to this. I was hooked, and immersive events in California, especially. I really liked the Iron City immersive event, which was created to promote the movie Battle Angel Alita. That was super fun. Tommy Haunton, actually, he helped out with that event with the game flow for it. I found out just a couple weeks ago. And this is something that was, I went through that event twice. I was just blown away. It's interesting to look back 6 years ago or whatever at something that was very inspirational like that. And since then, other events like Arcane from Secret Cinema was amazing. And there was an event called Intruder Escape that was also really cool, but mainly just escape rooms in general. I got the bug. I was hooked. And so I've done a ton of escape rooms leading up to this point.
I would say to clarify, when Scott and I met, I had done two escape rooms.
Oh, wow.
And right. He had already been well over 300. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So as far as like escape room knowledge, I definitely defer to Scott.
Right. But since then, have you done a lot more now?
Yes. Yeah. I just hit 80 rooms.
Nice. Oh,
there you go.
And I'm about to do another like 15 in June. So,
she's catching up, Scott.
Doing a little trip.
I am determined. I want to vote in the next Topeka. So,
there you go. Nice.
Yeah. It's like Kaylia has the advantage of understanding what like good rooms are early on. For me, I just went through just the worst rooms in 2017 or 2016 or whatever. And I didn't know any better. They were great at the time, but Kaylia's ratio of amazing rooms to less stellar rooms is definitely not quite the same as mine.
That's fair.
I have a much better guide than I think Scott had.
Yeah.
That's funny. Guys get together and start talking. So how did Immersive Machine finally come into existence?
When Scott and I started talking, he was telling me about his dream to build an escape room. And I was like, I like I said, I had played one full escape room and one at the Ren Fair. So I don't know if that second one actually counts, but I understood the idea. And he was talking about all the skills and all the things that would be needed. And I was like, hey, I've got those skills. I've got that. I know how to do that. And he was talking about all the things that he knew how to do. And I just so happened to have this building. I was given this building by a family member to do something with because he didn't want to pay the taxes on it. He owns it. So I was like, okay. So I was attempting to build out my own thing there. And it was right at the beginning of COVID is when I got the building. So whatever I was doing was not working.
Nothing would have.
Nothing did.
Yeah. And considering it's like I spent the entire first year of my rent-free part of the lease rebuilding everything, and there were no contractors. So it's like I'm doing everything myself. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I had this building and he starts talking, and I must mold on that. What was it, like another month before I came back to you, Scott?
No, it was 6 months.
Was it 6 months? Oh my
it was
God.
6 months later that you
probably
came back.
Probably because I was nose deep in rebuilding that building.
So then it was Creative Arts Collective, right? This is what your other business is?
Yes. So the Creative Arts Collective is still kind of a thing. It was a art studio that I was going to have like live events at, and I was renting space out to artists and things like that. And while the live events never happened, I do still rent out to artists in the areas. So it's more of a complimentary. It helps us and it helps artists. So sure. It helps us pay rent for the areas that we're not using.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's still there.
Nice. Yeah. When we got there, we were like, are we sure we're in the right place?
Think of it like a speakeasy.
It was seriously one of the things that we, as we're building our escape room business, is we thought it would be cool, and anybody who wants to use this, feel free, but to have a sip and solve. So there'd be puzzles out in a lobby and people can, or in a room, and people can just sip their drink and go around and look at the cool puzzles and solve them and stuff like that. We always thought that would be fun. And I feel like the collective and escape room, I'm like, that's a blend right there. The sip and solve, even though it's art, it's not the puzzles, but I don't know. I just always thought about that. I think about you guys.
That's a great idea.
Depending on how long they're waiting for the game, the puzzles may have to get easier because they're going to be a little more toasted as they clip in.
It would be cool, though, after an escape room to be able to hang out in a place like that, have a
That's
drink
true.
And solve mm-hmm. some puzzles. So I think you could definitely sell it as a post-game hangout.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, we've talked because you definitely don't want any alcohol imbibed before games.
Right. Yeah.
Because people will take advantage of that. So afterwards, I'd say that's probably the better idea.
For sure. For sure.
There is a place on the west side of Phoenix that has alcohol. They have a bar. They'll serve you drinks before the game. And then every single escape room they have has a mechanism in it for you to hit a button to get drinks delivered into the game while you're playing it.
Yeah,
I've heard horror stories from the employees that work there.
I could only imagine.
Yeah. That definitely make me think that it's not a great idea, but that's a novel idea.
Now, a button for snacks, I would take that. You guys think Immersive Machine will stay at that location then?
So the idea of the Immersive Machine is that each location basically is a theme instead of having different rooms that are a theme. Our first room is El Cybernetics, and it sets the stage for the rest of the location is going to be like a city block in the future, like Core City. And then you'll have different missions to do around the city, basically. So, yeah, we want eventually to expand to different locations, and then each of those locations will have its own theme. So it'll be like the Immersive Machine Core City, and then the Immersive Machine something else.
Okay. Wow.
So we're going to have three set rooms, then we'll have the lobby, and the lobby will be an experience as well. So we'll have four experiences.
But we're being very conscious when we design the rooms now, because we do want a fourth experience that, like Kay said, includes the lobby, but also includes all of the rooms simultaneously. So you have the entire building. It's a different storyline and a different plot, but it would be for large groups or for people who want to spend, enthusiasts who want to spend 3 or 4 hours playing the whole, a different storyline that's separate, but it includes the entire building.
So in Phoenix, there's some really good rooms. I think about you guys. I think about Paragon. I think about Nemesis Club. Do you talk to each other? Is there a good relationship? Or do you're like,
No, absolutely. Especially between the three of us and a little bit less so a couple other companies, but I think some of the older companies feel threatened by Nemesis and us and Paragon. So they're not quite as much of a part of this new community that we're trying to form, but the new kids in town, we're all definitely doing our best to stay in touch and to cross promote each other and to build a community basically. And I think it feels, because we're here, the bar is being raised for all the other locations around town.
Hey, listen, high tide raises all ships, right? So
that's
good.
That's the hope. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, it's good networking too. You bounce ideas off each other. And plus when somebody's going to do a room and they've done it, so then you can suggest other, hey, go here, check them out and do that. It's always good to have more. I love that.
Yeah, 100%.
I was literally just talking about this yesterday. I was like, my working experience, I came from like high-end sales. My family has owned businesses for 50 years. And like, mm-hmm. every industry that I've ever been involved with, it's so competitive. And I was literally sitting there with my stepdad yesterday and I was like, I love this industry because for the most part, we're not competition.
Yeah.
Like we're not. We promote each other. Once you've played our room, yeah, absolutely. Go play this other one. Of course I want you to go play other good rooms. Yes, yep. I will recommend someone else.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's so different from like high-end sales where everybody is trash talking everybody.
We always felt that with our old business that we wanted to create enthusiasts, right? That was our goal, is to create enthusiasts. You get all these new people that come in to play escape rooms and we're like, we want this to be a hobby because it's good for the industry. The competition were the really bad rooms. You know, we don't want you to go there because then you're done. You play one of those games, you're never going to want to play another one. So yeah, we supported each other that had rooms that people wanted to play.
Yeah. You know, just earlier this week, we had a group of, I don't know, they were probably like 20-year-old, you know, younger people. And they came in and they had this kind of chip on their shoulder. They thought they were kind of like making fun of the idea of escape rooms and like, you know, they didn't have high expectations. They didn't know what was going on, but there's no better feeling for me for when that group comes out and they're just like, I want to go do another room. This is so cool. Like right. There was one guy and he just kept on like high-fiving me and kept on like giving me fist bumps. And he's like,
nice.
That was so cool, man. That was so amazing.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah. To convert a new group to enthusiasts. That's the dream.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I get it.
So tell us a little bit about the process of creating Cells Cybernetics.
It involved a lot of failure. Not really, but it's like, for me in the tech side, I didn't come from like specifically electronics background. I do tech work, but it was all new to me. So I really had to fail a bunch in order to figure things out. I had to blow up a lot of electronics and a lot of lights. Luckily, like we were talking about, the community is so good that there's people in the best escape rooms in the world, and the tech people from Palace Games and Trivium and Lucurio and just all around, these amazing tech people everywhere are happy to share all of their knowledge and open up their doors and share their code. And it definitely helped a lot to have that as a resource. And now that I'm further along and I'm better at the tech side of things, I'm trying to pay it forward also. So anytime someone comes in, has questions, or anytime anyone emails me, it's always, I'm happy to share everything I've made, because again, we want to see the improvement.
I may be emailing you.
Well, please do. Yeah, absolutely. But as far as, the process for building Cells, it took us a year to the day. We started on January 5th, 2022. Okay. And literally opened on January 5th, 2023. But Kay can go more into the other half of that. You did all the heavy lifting.
Yes. The process of building Cells was interesting. It's one, we were definitely getting used to having someone else's opinion to take into consideration with our creative processes, which I think both of us weren't super used to doing. But I think we've managed to get to the point where we can compromise. Like we have a conversation, and usually it ends up being amalgamation of our ideas, and that sells. I think there's literally only, what was it, two things that survived the initial planning process for Cells.
Really?
Yeah,
there were only three things. There were three things that actually survived from start to finish. Cells was going to be a pawn shop at one point. Then it was going to be a medical center. And then it turned into the cybernetic upgrade dock. No, it was going to be a gun shop. That's what it was. It was a pawn shop. Oh. Then it was a gun shop. And then it became the cybernetics that it is now.
Wow.
But
we've had a lot of Google Docs that have many, 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 many tabs to them of lots of things that we have decided not to do. We have killed a lot of darlings for sure. And I think it was a big learning process in general to be able to compromise for sure. And then also to be able to just say, okay, this isn't fun. Let's scrap it and start again.
There were a lot of late night, hey, I've got a crazy idea texts that I
We had one whole room that we changed gears on a week before we opened. It was a small room, but we had an idea for what it was going to be. And then we just decided it wasn't as fun. So we just got rid of it and gutted it and redid it like a week before we opened. So
wow. So are any of these darlings going to show up in future games? You still keep them in like this file?
Yeah, maybe not in that exact format that we thought of them.
Sure.
Yeah, no, now we just have a whole new Google Doc that has even more tabs of things that we've discarded. This the next room we're building is called the Neon Streets. It's like the streets of Tokyo. And I actually had the idea for this room. This was the idea that I wanted to build back in 2017, like when I first had the idea of building an escape room. And every year I would go back and I would throw half of it away and redo it and throw half of it away and redo it. And it got much more dialed in to what I wanted when we started the build process at the beginning of this year. But at the same time, once Kalia got involved, Kate brought so many more ideas to the table that I'm happy throwing away most of it again. And it's, even though the general idea is there, Kate is just, it's amazing to have someone else creative to bounce ideas off of.
Right.
And we're both passionate, and sometimes we both have ideas of things that we really want to do. And I think it's important when we're talking to each other to, like, if we figured out that if we have one of those ideas, to tell the other person to, like, hey, I really like this idea. Can we sleep on it and then revisit it tomorrow? Okay. It's very hard to shift. If you have an idea in your head, it's hard to shift that idea out sometimes. So learning that language of compromise was definitely important.
I think my favorite creative clashings is when we're both talking about it, the same puzzle, like the same area of the room, and we're both describing two different things because we both have two different ideas of how this thing is supposed to look. And then we have to go, wait, hold on, will you please describe to me or draw out to me what you think this is supposed to look like, because I don't think it's the same thing that's in my head right now. And it usually ends up being a mashup by the time we're done.
So I'm looking, we're designing our games right now. What kind of advice would you have? Is it coming up with, do you come up with a storyline and then you do puzzles? Or do you, like, here we're going to design out the game and all the props and then we'll make puzzles from the props? Or how does that work?
Yeah, I think we're always story first and then work backwards. What makes sense in the scheme of the story? One thing that we learned in the design process of Sal's was we wanted to be very mimetic. We wanted everything to be in world, everything, you're doing things that make sense in the scheme of the world. And I was a little obsessed with that idea, but at a certain point, I think we learned that fun is the factor that has to be number one. So if something is more fun, then you get rid of some of the theming. It can still be in theme, but it doesn't have to be like exactly, oh, this only makes sense in the scope of this. Like, people will give you a little bit of leeway. Yeah. But yeah, I think fun has to be the main goal. And personally, as far as escape room design, I'm of the belief that escape rooms should move to having much more content that's easier in general. Mm-hmm. So that people can solve things quickly back to back to back and keep that flow of serotonin. Then they're challenged from time to time with a couple of challenging things. But if you want to increase the difficulty of a room, then just add more content instead of making a puzzle harder.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
We call it chasing the dopamine.
Right.
The first part of Sal's is very much like an ADHD paradise. You're just lots of little quick hits where it's you don't stop moving. They're not super hard for the average escape room player, but it's fun, it's quick, it's fast paced. And then we have them slow down later with the harder puzzles. And that design makes it, I think, just makes the time flow for them, where they're not counting down like, are we there yet? Are we done yet? Is it time to go? They don't even, half the time, they don't even realize there's no clock in the room with them. They're just going the entire time.
Well, really, your game ramps up. It does.
It's
near the end.
It does. And we wanted to end on something that everyone can interact with. Instead of, it gives everyone the chance to do something, to click things and to press things, and not to spoil anything, but it's, yeah, I think we are very much a multi-linear game where you have a bunch of things you can do in a section, and then that narrows down to a point where you can tell the story, and then it opens back up again, and there's a bunch of stuff that everyone can put their hands on, and then again it narrows down to the story. I think that's the only way you can really tell story in escape rooms. It's very hard to tell story during the body of the game while people are solving things, because they're just too distracted. So
you have to corner them to
shut everything down. Talk at the beginning of the game, at the end of the game, and then at those the bookends.
And also bottlenecks and bookends.
Right. Bottlenecks and bookends. I like that.
We have an entire puzzle that was built because I found a giant clicky breaker. This thing was the size of my head, and I was walking around clicking this thing, and I went, I want a puzzle like this. So it depends. I think it just depends on how your brain works and like where the creativity comes in, because if you find something that fits the world, but you don't know what it's there for, you're going to figure out how to put it in there.
Yeah.
100%. You're right. Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
You got to be flexible, and you got to be open to inspiration. So if you are inspired by some clicky buttons and switches, then yeah.
I like how you talked about the bookends, because that's so important. You start, you end well, like, as long as you got some good stuff in the middle, that people forget about that a lot of times, but those bookends are so important. And you guys start your experience right off the bat, right? Like your waiting room is even awesome.
Yeah. Oh, just to go back, the bookends and bottlenecks is something that Strange Bird Immersive has presented on. They have a really cool video you can watch about it, I think, and an article.
I think
on
it was a TED Talk, wasn't it?
It might have been, yeah. But
I think their original one was a TED Talk, and then they did it at Recon too, where they talked about the bottlenecks and bookends. And it's really, if you're thinking about starting an escape room, it is a fantastic talk that talks about game flow, and game flow is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
But yeah, our waiting lounge, it came after the game opened. We have to pick our battles. Like, it's just two of us, so it takes us forever to build stuff. So of course, the game came first, but
the idea for the briefing room didn't come around actually until after the game, like the idea for it, because we had an area with a giant, huge pull down screen, and like we had like couches and a lounge area for the art anyway. And we were like, we're just going to use this. Then we started using it, and we're like, there's no magic circle, which is another talk by Strange Bird where they talk about the magic circle, but we had no magic circle. There was no place where the immersion and the idea started. And that's when we came up with the idea for the waiting room for them.
And whose idea was it to have costumes available?
Me.
Which is so funny because, well, I've played with people, like if there is anything in a room to put on, they're going to put it on. Me, I'm a big guy. I'm like, nothing here is going to fit. So I'm not even going to try, but that I've never seen that. I haven't seen where there is a hanger full of clothes that you can put on. There are lab coats and rooms and that type of stuff. And there's some hats and stuff, but just the start of that. And then free, like snacks and drinks and puzzles to solve to get to them. I was like, Tina and I wanted to stay in there. You came in a little early, and I was like, man, I want 15 more minutes in this room.
I will say that part was all Scott, as far as like the snacks and having the puzzles in there. That was Scott's part.
Yeah, there's been a couple of escape rooms in the past that have had like snacks around, but I'm a big believer in the idea of amenities in general. Like, you're paying a premium price to come and do an escape room experience. I think we can afford to give you a bottle of water and some coffee. And the snacks is a fun little surprise. It's behind a locked box, so if someone gets into it, then they get that little, oh, this is so cool. It's led to a lot of really good moments for us, because a lot of people, they want to look cool. They want to take photos. They want to take selfies. And so we have a space that they can do that before the game even starts. And it's helped us with our marketing. There's been a lot of TikTokers who've come through. And now if you search for escape rooms in Arizona, like in TikTok, we're like we come up like the whole first page of results. Nice. So we've gotten a lot of people that way.
You don't allow pictures and video in the room, do you?
After, no, we do. Yes.
You do. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Hey,
yeah, that's something.
Cool thing. Why wouldn't we want our customers to take pictures?
Exactly. Yeah. I love that.
They advertise for us.
I don't know why other places don't get that.
Makes no sense.
We just did four rooms at a place last weekend, and we said, oh, get our picture, because we get a picture at every place we go. And they said, yeah, we'll take in the lobby. And I was like, oh, here we go. And I go, we can't take in the room. No, the owners won't let us. And I'm like, these are not ones we're going to share. I'm just going to tell you, we'll take our picture. It's just going to be for us. Mm-hmm. And the rooms are really cute and they had good set design. I'm like, show this off. I don't get it.
Yep.
I honestly wonder what the ratio is of those places that don't let you take and the ones who do let you take in the room. How many of those that do let you take it in the room made the room? Like themselves had their hands physically in at least 50% of its build. Like it's their baby, it's their art piece versus the ones that don't. How many of those were bought or built by someone else or they were the purse and they weren't really the builder? Yeah. You do see that a lot.
I think it's just an old philosophy. Like when escape rooms started, it seems like there was one or two prominent escape rooms that said, okay, these are going to be 60 minutes. They're going to have this in it. And then you're going to get a photo afterwards. You're going to hold a sign. Like these are the things. And then everyone just copied off of that.
Sure.
And then it became like a rule that people for no reason just started adopting.
So with the waiting room, and you said that kind of came afterwards, but going to other places, how important do you think that first part before you even get in the room, maybe it's the lobby experience or maybe it's where you watch the video. How important is that, the overall experience?
I think, okay, so in sales, like high-end sales, when you're talking to someone, they make their opinion of you in the first 6 seconds. So the beginning experience is super important for their overall experience. We try to get people in there as fast as possible because, yeah, we're still in transition. Like things are like that, but I have never once since we opened had someone complain about waiting while I reset
it. I think it's an added value. Like I think the escape room, like before we even had that, it was interesting because people would, it would lower their expectations, our lobby previously. And then when they would go into the room, they would be like, oh, wow. Cause you all of a sudden flip the script and then change their expectations again. But the more things that people can look back on as, can you believe they did that? Oh, that was really cool. Yeah, this was cool. Like the more of those you can stack on, the more memorable the experience is going to be. And I can't wait personally until we finish, when we finish the next room, we're going to then tackle the entrance in the lobby. And we want the magic circle to extend to the front door. So we want, as soon as they walk into the door, for them to come into the city, basically. And to be in character the whole time. And so that's nice. Something I'm really looking forward to, but we have to do things one thing at a time. Yeah.
Will each of your new rooms have its own waiting room, or you just have like one big one that fits the theme of all, or?
So we're going to have the one. We might have multiple ways we're going to use it, but we're going to have the one and we'll just stagger the starts essentially. But our Arkin, your game master, your contact with the resistance, will be a set theme essentially for your start point crusher games. And then they'll take you to your starting point. It's like in a video game where you're running around a city, like you have like where you get your mission board from, right? And then you go out from there to your various points. So that's the idea.
Or do you play video games? Okay.
Yes, yes, I do.
Do you?
Nice.
I know Scott does, yeah.
I'm a Nintendo junkie and a PC nerd, so.
Awesome. So the square footage of Sal's, what is it?
I'm going to guess it's 500?
Sal's, I believe, actually is closer to 8.
Oh, is it really?
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other room's going to be about the same size?
No, I'm sorry. Actually, no, I think Neon Streets is 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost 9.
It's going to be bigger.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Yeah. Neon Streets is going to be like 50%, 60% bigger than Sal's. And we're shooting right now for a 90-minute experience. We'll see when it's actually done, if that's true or not. Whatever the experience dictates is what we'll set it at.
Okay. And are you worried at all that a 90-minute experience, because you're going to have to charge more, is going to get less people?
I don't think so. We'll still have the 60-minute room. And once they play, we were talking with the owner of Ohm Escapes. We were in San Francisco and they were talking about, you think that your second room is going to be, you know, double your income. regardless of what it is, it's just going to double your income. And it doesn't. It exponentially increases it, because now you have the people who played your first room and liked it, who bring their friends because they want to play the second room. Then they play the second room, and their friends who have never played your first room want to come back and play your first room. So they advertise each other. And even with the 60-minute room, which we're not overly priced or anything in the area.
Sure.
In fact, I think we're underpriced. But they can play Sal's, fall in love with Sal's, and then they justify in their brain why to pay me on. And so forth. So I think it will balance itself out either way.
Yeah.
If it turns out that it is counterproductive for us, we don't mind pivoting. We can always streamline something, make it easier, take things out if we need to. But I think we're going to design for the experience first to be the most fun possible experience we can think of, and then figure out after that what it needs to be.
As you're designing this new one, what's your process? You sketch it out, or like, where do you even find ideas for cyberpunk? Are you going to Tokyo, visiting there?
I did spend a month in Tokyo, and that was like one of the reasons. And I just love cyberpunk movies and games and everything else. But yeah, so that was the inspiration, I guess. And there's one concept which I can't really talk about that is the reason why I wanted to do this room in the first place, and the reason why I think it'll be a lot of fun. But as far as the actual design process, Kalia works in a very unique way as far as the structural design.
Okay, so first and foremost, I had no idea what cyberpunk was when I met Scott. My main background when I was building like costumes and doing like cosplay and props and things like that was like Victorian, like Elizabethan and medieval stuff. So I had to learn. I knew what steampunk was, and I love steampunk, but I had to learn what cyberpunk was. And right at the time when we met, we were doing this whole thing, the game Cyberpunk 2077 came out. So I would have research days where I would spend like 10 hours running around that game, taking screenshots. So yeah, I gave myself a crash course in cyberpunk, and I definitely refer to Scott more when I'm like, I don't understand what this is supposed to look like. But so what he was referring to as I work in a very strange way, you asked, do we sketch it out to be? Yes, there are sketches, but a majority of what we do ends up in Google Sheets. And I draw in Google Sheets.
Oh, really?
You can actually turn the cells into perfect squares and use it like digital graph paper. You can't get rounded corners and things like that, but for the most part, you can get a general idea, and you can make like a square equal an inch or a foot or half a foot. And I have layouts, constant layouts of our entire room in Google Sheets.
That's awesome.
It works. And I'm using them now to give myself an idea of where the electronics and where the power needs to be run, where audio needs to be run, Ethernet. So like, I can use them as a schematic for myself for wiring the tech.
Mm-hmm. All right. So no SketchUp. Nobody's learned SketchUp or anything. Okay.
No. Although I just last week got a 3D printer, and I've dove into Fusion 360, and I've started to do 3D modeling, and I'm super hooked. I'm having such a blast making things.
Chris and I talk about that. We need to get
3D printer. I got one coming.
Got one coming? Nice.
Oh, awesome.
I don't know how to use it, so I'll be calling you, Scott. But
I didn't know. Literally a week ago today is when I got my printer.
Oh, wow.
And I watched a bunch of YouTube videos, and then I went through a tutorial. Like, I spent 3 days going through and making tutorial for Fusion, making 3D models. And then I dove into my first project, and I went through 18 iterations in 1 week. But it's pretty much done now, and it's working. It's a little
so
miniature
cute.
Electronic.
What's that? I said, it's so cute. You need to give yourself more props, because you've literally had this a week.
Yeah.
Is that kind of how you do all the... That's awesome. Is that how you do all the tech, kind of YouTube and learning through there? Or did you have like someone helping you?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I can't thank enough like the other owners or the other tech people, like Dan Egnor and Jesse and Kevin, and there's so many of them. They're all the tech people. There's a Discord, an escape room enthusiast Discord, and there's a tech channel in there. And those people, like, live in there, and you post a question and then you get a million replies in instantly. So awesome. It's just, or if I'm stuck somewhere, Ben Andrews is a guy who's designed a bunch of escape rooms around mostly on the West Coast, but he's designed the tech for a bunch of them. And I was stuck on audio for sales for a long time. And he literally remoted into my computer and walked me through the process of setting up a Raspberry Pi to trigger audio stuff and using a program that he wrote himself. But for the most part, I put myself through the process of trying to teach myself first. And I usually do it longer than I probably should before asking for help. But that's the way I learn. I tried to teach myself using classes and online tutorials before we started building our escape room. And nothing sunk in until you're actually building stuff and failing. That's how I learned.
So not to get into any spoiler, but that VR, how does that work? How did you set that up, or how did you learn how to do that?
Yeah, that was an extra challenge that it was a lot more work than most people would put themselves through, but It's made in Unity. So Unity is a video game engine, and I just had to literally teach myself Unity to make it. I did outsource I took pictures of the room and someone scanned in those pictures and they created a 3D environment. That 3D environment I ended up having to throw away, but I used all the textures that they created. But then I had to create the logic. And then the hardest part of it all was getting the VR headset and Oculus to talk using Unity to the rest of the room, which operates in MQTT, which is like a wireless communications language, which is not something that Unity likes to do. So I was stuck on that for a long, long time. And thankfully, Kevin Burns, who works in a bunch of escape rooms in SoCal, he helped me through the biggest hurdle of that. But now I know what to do, and I've updated it a bunch since then. Yeah, so it's basically Unity talking through MQTT to the iPads and to the rest of the room. And it's something we still need to iterate and improve on, but I'm pretty happy with people.
I think you refer to that one as the bane of your existence. All the puzzles, that was the hardest.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you know, I can't find the translator here on my side. I have no idea what he said about Unity
MQTT and
I don't either. I usually kind of go off in La La Land when he starts. That's talking right. About
it's just that's an Easter egg for those of you that know the talk. You'll be able to be right. Like, oh yeah, I got you.
I'm the grunt. I pick things up, I put them down. He makes things talk to stuff.
That's why you guys are such a good team.
Speaking of things talking, you have a talking toaster, right?
I got my sticker.
So how did you get to the point of choosing a toaster for a cyberpunk world?
Do you remember how I said there were only three things that survived from start to finish? Crumbs was one of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Crumbs initially existed on the neon streets, and the thing that I wrote 6 years ago. I loved Red Dwarf growing up, and it's like a British sitcom sci-fi, There's a talking toaster in that called Talkie, the Talkie Toaster or whatever. And he's obsessed with bread. And I've always liked that idea. So I wanted to put an homage to Talkie into the game, basically. And yeah, he's not only the hint system in the game, but he's also a quest giver. So it forces people to interact with him. And even people that are shy or they feel like they're too cool to talk to the game master or to get in character in the room. I think we break through almost everyone in the room.
Crumb. I can't think of another hint system that I like more than Crumbs. And I had heard that it was from Red Dwarf. I had never seen or heard of the show, but I had to look it up. And it took a few episodes to finally find him. And I was like, okay, I get it. I get why, because in the show, it's super cute. Right. And yeah, all he talks about is bread. He just wants to make bread for everybody. He just wants to make bread. That's what his purpose is. Crumbs is what we talked about more than anything after we did Sal's. And so I'm glad you kept it in.
So you got my crumbs, my version of Crumbs. And I didn't grow up watching Red Dwarf. If you were to have Scott be Crumbs for you, his Crumbs is very wholesome.
Oh, it's very different, huh?
His Crumbs is very different. We have the same little hint lines that we give for certain things, but our delivery is very different from game master to game master. And we want to encourage that within reason. moving forward.
When we do have employees, we want them to bring their own personality to the system, to Crumbs, basically. Yeah.
Okay, you did an awesome job. It's so memorable. You say you have the lines and stuff, but it's fun. It's funny. Did you work on that together and be like, okay, if they ask this, we do that? Or for this quest?
We leave each other notes when things work. I don't know how many texts we back and forth that we've had where I'm like, oh my God, I tried this tonight. It was hilarious. I don't know where it came from, but it landed so hard.
Nice. Nice. I love that.
Yeah, it's constantly evolving and changing.
It is evolving and changing, Scott, always.
So I told you I got the 3D printer and I worked on this project. So this is the first thing that I made. And so it's a little Crumbs.
Yes.
And it actually.
Oh, it turns on.
It talks. Yeah, I basically recorded audio samples and so I've been making these guys is the first thing that I made on the 3D printer.
Are you going to have them as merch?
Yes. Are you going to mass produce these?
Yeah, I hope so. So right now I'm making a bunch of them to give away and to trade because I'm going to Neotropolis, which is like a cyberpunk festival. That's like a 5-day long, like role-playing festival. And
it's like in the desert, right?
Yeah. Same people who do Wasteland Weekend. I've never been before, but we've been so busy building the escape room that we haven't been able to take time off. But luckily, Kay is awesome and is covering for me while I'm in the desert. And I'm basically making a portable version of Crumbs that I'm going to carry around on a strap.
Okay.
And I have a remote control so I can trigger different audio dialogue lines so I can have him talk to people during the event.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I have the little mini Crumbs to give out and trade with people.
Escape rooms don't do enough merch. When we were traveling, going to all these escape rooms, we were like, okay, do you have whatever? There's something in your room that we really like. There was a character or something. Mm-hmm. Can we get a sticker? Can we get a plushie? Can we get anything? And in fact, I think I remember asking Kay specifically, I was like, what do you have for Crumbs? We got the sticker and I was like, yes. Magnet too? No. Okay. Plushie? No. Okay. So hopefully one day.
Once you're getting into building an escape room, you will find this out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have merch that you physically sell, you have to have inventory. Then you have to take care of said inventory. Then you have to track said inventory. And then you have to pay taxes on said inventory.
Yeah.
Then also let's talk about plushies. Scott, would you like to explain about plushies?
We really wanted to make a plushie of Crumbs, but we did a lot of research and you can get someone on Etsy to make you a plushie for $30, like one of them. But if you want to scale it up in any way, you have to buy 5,000 as the minimum order. So we just couldn't justify buying 5,000 Crumbs yet.
We didn't know if they could sell or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one thing we were thinking about doing is making Squishmallows, because you can actually do it yourself, but then you have to like hand paint each of them. So that's a big pain. So I think the little mini Crumbs are the next iteration of that. So at least we'll have something for people. And what's cool about
it is, if I get you to make a solid one of that, I will make a mold and then I'll like just pour them.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm just glad you have stickers. I feel like that's so easy because I put stickers on everything. I'm a camp person. So I got all these camp stickers everywhere, water bottles. And so I'm like, man, if y'all would just have stickers. And I've done 70 some odd rooms now. Finally, just last week, got my first sticker at a room. Like it's taken 70 some odd rooms to finally get one.
I want to have more designs. Like I just need to sit down and I need to draw out more. Because
I think we were jealous when we went to Home Escape in San Jose. They had a sticker for each of their rooms and their stickers are beautiful. Yeah. So well made. And so like we want more.
That'd be cool. So you got Crumbs and he's your kind of your character. Have you ever thought about a live character at any point in your escape rooms?
Kay's like shaking her head.
No, we never considered, not once, having a live actor in the room.
I mean, with Crumbs, you don't need it. Honestly.
Yeah.
You have a live actor in the room. It's
we had Crumbs and we never considered putting a human being in the room with them at any point during that process.
We have Arkin, the game master, role plays before the game and after the game. And we're going to get a little bit more into that the further along we go into the build of the other rooms. So we have actors, but I've always felt it's uncomfortable sometimes to have an actor in the room. It's like you feel self-conscious and
that's true.
Not everyone wants that or wants them in their space. But I remember one of the first rooms I did that I really loved the hint system was at Crossroads in SoCal at Funhouse. And there's just a painting that talks to you and is silly and hilarious. And it doesn't feel like intrusive. It feels right. You can be yourself and you don't feel self-conscious. So that was another reason that we went the route of crumbs.
Yep, same thing. In a game that where there's a live actor, I am absolutely fine with them popping in, doing whatever, and leaving. And then maybe a few times. If they're in there the whole time, I don't want to have to improv with you. Especially if you're a live actor. If I'm improvising or talking with a toaster, I'm fine with that.
You can choose to talk to him or not. And right. There's a screen between you, essentially.
Exactly.
And there are rooms like Ms. Jezebel and The Last Supper. There are rooms where they have actors that do come in and you do improv with them and you do act with them. But you're right. They leave and then you're allowed to have fun.
That was the same with Strange Bird. That's the way they do it. The actor is there for the beginning and then they leave and then they come back and then you deal with just a couple other things, but like they leave you to have that space to breathe.
Yeah. I feel stupider when they're watching me. Like why can't I think all of a sudden they're watching me?
I haven't done Last Supper yet. I'm supposed to do that in June.
Oh, so your June is a SoCal trip?
Yeah, I'm going with my family and we're going to go play games that he's already played because I have a lot to catch up on, obviously. I have The Ladder planned and Lab Rat, and I plan to do Project Minotaur, The Perfumer, Last Supper, and then we're kicking around the idea of doing The Basement and doing their breakfast one that they have where you go through all four chapters. Because it's the only one where I can get a booking at 10 o'clock in the morning on a weekday.
You're going to be doing some driving, that's for sure.
We have an RV.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, we're doing the RV thing. Staying at a really nice RV resort while we're there. So
Right. Did you want to give us any information on the new rooms that you haven't already? Or is that all under wraps? Don't want to say anything more. How about a date of when this is going to be available?
That's the hardest one. we're doing our best.
Let's put it in perspective. It took us a year to build Sal's.
And just now we're running an escape room and building at the same time.
We're hoping, fingers crossed, because of how much we learned with our first room, that we'll have it done by the end of this year, if not the beginning of next year.
Having one room, is it profitable? Or you're like, no, we need more rooms. This is just barely getting us by.
Considering, so we have a uniquely low overhead.
Right.
So while it's not making us rich, it is technically supporting me full time.
Okay.
While still paying him. And he's also still working his day job, though.
Yeah, and it's paying for the build for the next room. So we have all of our bills covered and we're not having to take out a loan or put money on credit cards to build the next room. So I think we're doing pretty well. Like
good.
All things considered, it'll be a huge jump when we finish the next room for us.
I think that's awesome that you guys found each other and did this. It's so cool. It's a great story.
Me too. 5 years ago, if you said you'd be an escape room owner, I'd be like, a what?
Right. That's so funny. Here in the Midwest, we keep having, I'll see schools, like old schools shut down for sale. I'm like, man, that would make a cool escape room because you got all those little rooms already. And
I was talking to the owners of Paragon and of Nemesis Club, and we said maybe sometime down the road we'll co-op into a building and we'll each have experiences there. You know, like it'd be really cool to have an old hotel there.
Yeah, that would be neat. That would be cool.
We have a Airbnb not far from us here that is an escape room all night, and you unlock, like, you have to get into the massage parlor. You have to get into the different rooms of the Airbnb to even use it. I'm like, I haven't tried it yet, but I'm like, that would be awesome. Staying all night at one. I think I'd like that.
There's one in Joshua Tree. That's Wild Horse Ranch Wild Heart Ranch. One. Yeah. That's very famous, but I think there's going to be more of those popping up, the Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. I'm trying. Just my brother different. Has an Airbnb, and I've been trying to convince him.
Maybe we'll both lean hard on him after we finish Neon.
Yeah,
there you go.
Or finish Core City.
Your other big kind of rooms there in Phoenix, the Paragon Nemesis, they have those 4-person minimums, but you guys have that 2-person with the small upcharge. Do you think you're going to stick with that as you keep opening rooms, or will that change maybe?
It's definitely going to change with the next room.
Yeah.
For the next room. I think the idea is if we can keep Sal's as a 2-person minimum, then at least we have something for the date nights. We have something that we get a lot of people that come to us because we have a 2-person available booking, basically. I like to have that, available for people, but the next room is much bigger and we're designing it so it can handle more people. But yeah, I think we can split it up so we have a small room and then we have one that has a larger minimum.
Well, Tina and I thank you for having that 2-person minimum so we could do it.
We've definitely talked about adjusting the small group fee.
Yeah.
If anything, but leaving it 2-person, because it is possible, like there are other rooms out there where it's possible to play them with 2 people, but you have to pay for 3 tickets or 4
right.
tickets. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that. I've had to explain that to people, like, no, you can pay for 4 tickets and play with 2 people because it's physically possible. This way it just throws it right out in the front. It's physically possible with 2 people.
Yeah, so I've seen where it says 2 to 4 people and then has a price, right? Okay, you could still play. And then the tiered pricing of 2 people are this, 3 people are this, 4 people are that. And then there are those games that are 4-person minimum and they have to be, there's just too much to do.
People.
And we played one of those games and it ended up being one of our favorite games. But when we finished, we were like, we thought we were doing nothing really tripped us up. And the game master comes in and we're like, all right, well, we didn't finish, but how well do we do? And she said, oh, you got through 57%. But yeah, it's hard when it's just 2 of you. If we go to Phoenix, we don't know anybody. And it's really difficult to try to find 2 enthusiasts. We did that on our trip a few times. And sometimes it works out. If there's just 2 of us, it's hard to justify paying for 4 people. Yet when we see it like a tiered pricing and we are paying more, we're like, we get it. So it's tough. It's tough. It's a tough thing.
Yeah. It's a good insight that you have. I'm appreciative to hear that you understand how it works financially, but
having both of them is helpful too, because you're going to have those date nights that then come back and say, hey, we brought our friends to do Neon City, or we brought a group this time. And so just because you're going to have those people that are want to bring other people to join. That's how Karen and I are.
That's that
we like to have our
curve
own
curve that you're talking about.
And more people, getting them excited. Mm-hmm. I love it.
But and that next room is going to be almost, twice the size of a regular room. So I get it. It makes sense. Cool. All right. Any other tips and advice for somebody like me who's just starting to build a new one from scratch?
Are you super excited to be able to have your own?
Super excited. Yes.
Yeah. How hard it is already. We knew it was going to be difficult, the build. And then, of course, it was even way more difficult than we thought it would be. And then we were open long enough to the point where we forgot about how painful and exhausting it is. And then now we're back in the process again.
Back in the weeds.
It's like having a baby and then forgetting how painful labor was and wanting to do it again. This is exactly how it felt.
We were just out of the diapers. Why are we back in diapers?
You literally, Kay was like, where do we start again? How do we do this? It's hard to know. There's so much to tackle. Like, where do we go? Like,
that's right.
I remember standing there in the space and going, how the heck did we do this last time? Mm-hmm. I don't even remember.
I would say for sure hop in that Discord channel, the tech or the fabrication channels, and the escape room Discord, and lean on people's experience, and because they're willing to share, they're happy to share. Cool. It's definitely not like other communities, and I'm happy to share also. Figure out, I don't know if you already know what kind of infrastructure you have as far as the tech. Figure that out sooner than later.
Okay. All right.
Cogs wasn't around when I was building, but if it was around, I probably would have gone that direction. It's something that's like kind of pre-built and has like documentation and you know how to hook stuff up to it. Even though it's a subscription model, I ended up going with Node Red, which is a free open source thing. And there's a lot of documentation for it, but there's a lot more, there's a much steeper learning curve with it. It does give us the opportunity now to go wherever direction we want now that we have it built.
I was going to say, like, the biggest lesson we learned from the first one that we're implementing hardcore in the second one is centralizing all your tech.
Okay. Okay.
Sal's kind of has, you have to go up into the ceiling wherever the puzzle is to fix anything. And this time we're doing a centralized tower. Okay. With everything, I think that was probably the biggest change that we had from last time. The other one was we figured out the layout from start to finish versus with Sal, we started in the front, worked in the back, and then installed the middle.
Really? Yeah. Interesting.
We didn't really know exactly what we wanted to do until we got there. Yeah.
That's so crazy that it sounds so like your heads were all over the place and it was, we did this last minute and only three things stayed. And yet it turns it out to be an amazing game. And it's like you caught lightning in a bottle.
We did clearly document. So we started out with a full-fledged idea and then it was edit. And there were iterations and it was constantly changing and morphing. And yeah, it was one of those, if it didn't work, that's another piece of advice. If it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't flow right, don't be afraid to kill it and throw it away.
And like a writer who has a character and they're just like, it doesn't belong, but I got to let them go. Mm-hmm. Even though as much as I love them, I got to let it go.
Right.
Yeah, I spent 2 months building the tech for a shooting gallery that was supposed to be in Sal's. And
this is awesome, the thing that changed that the week before.
Oh,
yeah,
my
they
goodness.
Pop up and then you shoot them and they fall over. And literally, I spent months on this thing figuring it out and it finally was working. And then it just was like, this isn't fun. Let's get rid of it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
There were a couple other factors in that. But yeah, it basically boiled down to it wasn't as fun as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And we did our beta testing without it. And it didn't detract from the game at all.
Yeah.
So we were like, I don't really see any reason not to just take this out and put something else in.
How long was your beta testing?
We started with the Arizona Puzzle Hunt people in November.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did two rounds of beta testing. The first round, we really probably weren't ready for it. But it just so happened that every year there's the Arizona treasure hunt and a bunch of puzzlers come into town and a bunch of them are escape room owners. And we had gotten to a point where it's like, oh, we want to show off what we've made a little bit. So let's invite them in and see what happens. We hadn't even gone through our own room at the point where they went through.
You were standing for that first round, like the first couple, you were standing there near one of the tablets with pieces of paper, laying them on top of it because the tech wasn't done yet.
Wow.
Yeah. But and on top of that, the people that were coming through were the owners of Lucario, Palace, Trivium, like all these super influential people that we just happened to know from the business and from the treasure hunt. And talk about a stressful first game ever.
Yeah, I bet.
And we were still learning how to be crumbs.
Funny.
Well, it's awesome. Funny. I love it. It has been awesome having the two of you on. If somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Well, yeah, we're the Immersive Machine on every social media, TikTok, Instagram, I guess technically Twitter.
If they want to talk directly, I'd probably say theimmersivemachine@gmail.com because we both see it. Regardless, you're going to get, one of us is going to see it.
So if you're listening and you have not been to Immersive Machine, you have to go. It's a must do. In fact, there's certain places around the country that are great places to go for a nice little escape room trip. And I think Phoenix is one of those places. Thank you guys so much for putting this together. I can't wait to see what else you're going to do. We're going to have to make another trip out there. And thank you for being on the show.
This was great. No, anytime.
Cool. We can't wait to see what you get to come up with now that you have creative carte blanche.
Yeah, it's come out here.
Oh, it's on our list for sure.
Cool.
Awesome.
This has been Kurt and Pris. Thanks for tuning in to Mystery Soup. Until next time, may your clues be clear and your escapes be triumphant. Keep puzzling, my friends.
See ya.
Mystery Soup.
Mystery Soup.